Welcome to the Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer. I believe, Robert, that you've been in state recently. What was the reason for your travels?
Now, I was in Sydney last week for the World Baseball Classic, which involved four teams, Australia, Philippines, New Zealand and South Africa, for place in the World Baseball Classic, which is in 2017.
All right, so how many of the four go through? Just the one or?
Just the one. The format's a little bit unusual, and Australia never got to play New Zealand because they played the seeded games the first day. So Australia played the Philippines and New Zealand played South Africa. And the second day, the two winners played off and the two losers played off. And the winner of the two losers played on day three against the loser of the game between the two winners. The winner of the two winners went straight to the final, and then the other winner on the third day went to the grand final, similar to the top four in the football.
All right, that's a very interesting way of doing things. I would have thought that you might have started off with a round robin and worked something out from there, which I would have thought might have been slightly a better process, but nevertheless, that's the way it was and that's the way it will be.
Well, there were six games scheduled, and if they did the round robin and there was a possibility, you know, three teams had two wins each, they'd have to play a couple of games to sort of sort it out, and they only had the time frame to have the six games.
Mm. And that's obviously the reason they chose the format that they did, I guess.
Yeah, it was really unusual. I'd never sort of come across anything quite like that before, but I was a bit disappointed because Australia never got to play New Zealand, and I've never seen Australia-New Zealand, and I've never seen Australia-Philippines, so I got to see that. I have seen Australia-South Africa in the Olympics in 2000.
Yes, it would have been nice because the friendly rivalry between Australia and the Kiwis in all sports is phenomenal, really. You've only got to look at the cricket or the netball, and it's just a tradition. I guess it's the sort of brotherly love and competition thing, isn't it?
No, it is. We both feed off that. Australia and New Zealand feed off each other, and it's a great rivalry.
It is indeed. So, tell us what happened.
Well, on the first night, Australia played the Philippines, and it was interesting because the Filipinos they came out with a lot of fire, and they actually scored in the first inning to take a 1-0 lead, but Australia came back and scored in the bottom of the first to make it 1-1, and the Filipinos, they kept going. They didn't score for the rest of the game, but they held Australia back. Australia got one run in the second, hit the front 2-1, and then it took them to the fifth innings before they finally got a couple of runs to give them a bit of distance. So the 4-1 scoreline held up to the seventh, and in the seventh innings, Australia sort of went gunbusters and scored seven runs to be 11-1 ahead, which caused the game to be called on the mercy rule, because in these international games they have a 10-run mercy rule if one side is in front by that amount after seven innings.
Well, isn't that interesting, because obviously it looks as though it was an absolute one-sided affair, but as you've just explained, for a long period of the time it was a very competitive match.
And the player of the day actually was from Filipino second baseman. He was just sensational the way he went diving to stop a ball which, if it had got through, Australia would have opened with like three or four runs in the first innings, and it was such a real sparkling play, and it sort of took me by surprise. It was his name was Adrian Ross Bernardou, and he made a couple of errors afterwards, but pretty impressive play, and overall it looked like Australia just had a little bit more class, a little bit more pitching depth. The Filipinos just were like a bunch of battlers who are high-standard bunch of battlers.
Oh, that's very good, very good. So who did we play next?
Well, South Africa beat New Zealand on the first day, so we were scheduled to play South Africa. Now, they came to the tournament sort of thinking that they were good enough to take it up to Australia, and the trouble was that Australia scored three runs in the first innings in the bottom of the first to go 3-0 up, which really sort of like, you know, cut them down a little bit, because for the rest of the game, both teams only scored one run. So Australia won that 4-1. But having that start sort of made a huge difference.
Yes, they were playing catch-up the whole time from then, I guess.
Absolutely. Two interesting things on the two nights. On the Thursday night, I was down there in the Whitefield stands in the press box, and I was taking some photographs. And at one stage, there'd been a little bit of rain, and I took a photograph. And in the background, there was a huge rainbow. So that was really interesting to get a game of baseball with a rainbow in the background. And then the following day, lo and behold, in the background on an adjacent field, they were letting off fireworks. So I got another shot the next night playing baseball with fireworks in the background.
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely. What were the crowds like?
Well, that stadium at Blacktown, New South Wales, can only hold about 2,500. And on the Thursday, probably about 800. It was a little bit disappointing. But for the Friday night, they all come out. It was a full house. And it was interesting because my son, who's an officer in the Navy, flies helicopters over at Nowra, he came down, and I had to sort of go and buy his ticket for him because I got the word that they had almost sold out, and they did sell out on the night, and they were turning people away.
Oh, that's very good, isn't it?
Very good. Yeah, and then South Africa rebounded, and they beat New Zealand on the Saturday, and Australia won the championship game on the Sunday. They sort of like came through 12-5, and but the game was a little bit, it wasn't sort of as one-sided as that sounds. It's a little bit like the first game they played. Both teams scored a run in the first innings. Then Australia got a couple of runs in the fifth to go 3-1 up. But then South Africa, one of their players, hit a 3-run home run, and they actually hit the front. So they're 4-3 up, and in the bottom of the innings, Australia got a run. So they hit the front again. And then they tied. And yeah. Then they got two runs in the six innings to hit the front, 6-4. South Africa got a run in the seventh innings, the eighth innings to make it just a 1-1 ball game. And then in the bottom of the eighth, Australia exploded for 6 runs, and that's all she wrote.
Well, all over Red Rover.
Yes, but it was a great series. I went over to the Intercontinental Cup in Sydney back in 1999 and the Olympics in 2000. And in 2014, Australia played Los Angeles Dodgers and Arizona Diamondbacks. It's one of the great pleasures for me to go and watch international baseball at that level where it's just all the best Australian players.
Well, I think it's true of all. There's nothing nicer than seeing, no matter what the sport, the best, the elite sportsmen and women playing.
While I was in Sydney, there was a test game going on in New Zealand. What happened there, Rick?
Well, it was an amazing test match, actually. It was in Wellington, and the pitch was meant to be doctored, as it were, to favour the Kiwis. But unfortunately, they lost the toss and had to bat and were all out for about 180-odd. But the sensation of the first day was that Australia were 2-for-5, if I recall. And in the last over of the day's play, Adam Voges was comprehensively bowled, except he wasn't. And he wasn't because Ray Illingworth, a very experienced test umpire and test cricketer, called a no ball, which proved to be comfortably anything other than a no ball. He was well and truly heel behind the line. Unfortunately, replays don't apply in that situation. So Voges went to the overnight 7 not out, thus to make 230-odd before he was dismissed. And so that decision really had a major influence on the match.
Gee, I'm a little bit confused. On every ball where someone's out, they always refer to the third umpire to see if it's a no ball being bowled, but they don't do the reverse.
That's exactly right, and that's where I would suggest that the World Cricket Authority have to get their act together and either choose to go completely human, with every decision just being a human decision by the two umpires concerned, or you go totally digital and refer everything. Now, that probably has lots of complications and concepts of vision on television, but it so happens that the Kiwis have suffered badly twice because the Nathan Lyon referral in Adelaide, which was given out and the human third umpire overturned it definitely affected them in winning or losing that test match as well. So they haven't had the right end of the draw, as it were, in the last couple of games. But they've accepted it in very, very impressive human behaviour. There has been little or no protest, and I think that is a great compliment to the Kiwis.
Gee, it's an amazing circumstance, this third umpire. I'm thinking to myself, my preference probably would be to go, you know, with history so that everything's consistent, and just go with the, you know, the human error. I think the human error is better than, more consistent than the system they have at the moment.
Well, I mean, I'm an old cricketer, as you may know, but we obviously only had two umpires, and if I was being totally and utterly truthful, very rarely did they get it wrong. Sometimes I'd like to think that I was not out when I was given out, but the truth be known, that they very rarely made mistakes. And I think even with digital technology, we've proved that you are still going to incur mistakes, so why not just give it back to the two blokes who are getting paid to stand out there?
Oh, absolutely. And we had the situation in Australia against New Zealand with the line incident, where the technology said one thing, but the human element sort of overruled it.
I mean, again, it's the inconsistency, because we introduced the technology to help the umpires, or the human side of it, and then when we didn't like it, the human overrides the technology. And it's just, there's an inconsistency throughout that has to be sorted out, and sooner rather than later. Robert, I believe that there's been a quite high-class tennis tournament conducted in Elizabeth the last couple of days.
Yeah, so from Monday to Friday, the Grove Tennis Club, they've had the City of Playford Open Tennis Australia Platinum AMT, which is a money event. It's worth something like $10,000, and they have a men's draw and a women's draw. And it was really interesting. They had some players from overseas. In fact, the ladies winner was Susanna Slokova from Slovakia, who beat Petra Hull, H-U-L-E, Hull, from South Australia, 6-1, 6-2. And then in the men's, there was Gavin Van Pepozil from Queensland, and he beat Brad Mousley, 6-2, 6-1. So they weren't close, but high-standard games, both of them very interesting to watch, the top players, the court coverage, the passing shots, the way they change their games up. It's something we don't get to see locally very often.
No, that would have been very interesting to see. I believe there was a slight degree of controversy over prize money. Is that right?
Yeah, originally, when they've held this event in the past, it's been a $10,000 event, which is $5,000 shared between the top-level woman and $5,000 for the top-level men. But Tennis Australia apparently upgraded it to a Platinum Plus for the men, so that's $7,500 to be shared with the men, and $2,500, which is a silver ranking, for the women.
Oh, that's a little bit controversial in today's age, isn't it? And particularly since I believe they were all playing three sets rather than the men playing five.
Yeah, they're all playing the best of three. You got your Australian Open and Wimbledon and all that, where they the men play five and the women play three sets best of, and you can understand some of the arguments there with a pro rata of time played, but these the women spent more time on the court than what the men did in the final.
Yes, well, quite often the rallies with the women are extended, whereas I guess the more powerful men, they tend to be over a bit quicker, generally speaking. And superficially, it seems a bit unfair from what you've just told me.
Well, just sort of talking a little bit about the men's final, the Gavin Van Pasil actually stayed with Brad Mousley, who lives up at Golden Grove, and they're good mates off the court. And like he said to me, he said, we're mates on the court, off the court, but we're mortal enemies on the court. And he told me he'd never beaten Brad before in tournament play, but he had the better of him this time.
Oh, isn't that a lovely story? It really is, and it is the way sport should be. I think at the better level. It should be highly competitive, but it's the old white line fever. I think once you walk over that white line, then it's on for young and old within the rules of whichever sport you're playing. But you'd like to think that everyone is a good mate after they get off the court, and whether they've won, lost or drawn.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brad Mousley, he'd won a couple of junior titles with the Australian Open for the doubles a few years ago. And as you're probably aware, he's just over the last 6 months come back from a 12-month ban for taking a substance that was proven to be illegal in his system. And he served out his 12-month ban. He's been back. I was talking to him today. He said he's played 12 tournaments since he's been back, and he's been in three finals, this one being the fourth, and unfortunately he's lost them all.
Well, there you go. But it's nice to know that he served. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you do the crime, you serve the time. But once you've done that, then it's a white sheet as far as I'm concerned, and you get on with it and start all over again. And good luck to him.
Yeah, it wasn't a performance enhancing drug. It was. It was just he was at a party and someone had given him I'm not sure what it was, and it sort of showed up in his system when he played, so that's why he only got the 12 months.
Yes, it is amazing how life has changed, hasn't it? I might have mentioned to you before, back in when I was a young person, I used to run out and watch Sturt play footy, and Len Fitzgerald, who won 3 McGarry medals, the first thing he'd do at three-quarter time would be to get the hip flask and have some whiskey and a cigarette in his mouth. So I don't think that would happen today.
No, I remember even in the 70s when I was playing footy, the everyone would have a smoke at half time, and after the game, there'd be a choice. So either you get in and have your shower or just go and have a smoke.
Exactly, yes. It's a different world we're living in.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. This is the Rick and Rob Sports Show signing off. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.